This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. For $140, you can provide ultrasounds to five women in crisis pregnancies. Call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or visit preborn.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God? Come what may.
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thanks a lot for joining us again. The left is rejoicing over the election of Democrat Charisse Davids of Kansas. She is the first lesbian Native American elected to Congress in that state's third congressional district. The New York Times reports that Davids is among more than 400 LGBT candidates running for office this November. And according to the senior political director of the LGBTQ Victory Fund, that is the most ever. What are we to make of this so-called rainbow wave as Christians, in light of radical gay activists' intent to quash religious freedom and to elevate so-called gay rights? And what do they really want next? We're going to check in now with Peter LaBarbara, president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. Peter, great to welcome you back.
Thank you, Janet. And I just want to take a moment to thank you for your leadership on exposing the Revoice conference.
Oh, my. Well, I was hoping you could go and give me an on-the-ground report, but you got kicked out.
Yeah, not much diversity there, and not much diversity in this New York Times article we're going to talk about either.
No, for sure. Do you think this is a rainbow wave? What's your take on this?
Well, I think the homosexual activist, bisexual, transgender activist movement has, you know, in the last decade or so, really been pushing candidates because they know how effective that is. This New York Times piece was just, I'm trying to figure out the difference between this New York Times piece and a press release from GLAAD.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, it's incredible, you know, when you have the New York Times as your PR agency.
Yeah.
And I wonder they have an advantage. But I think this is a strategy that they see as effective because what they do is they get into various legislatures and then they use that sort of, I call it the satanic evangelism, friendship evangelism, Janet, where you use personal relationships to advance the LGBT agenda. And that's why this is so effective. They know that conservatives will be less bold in contesting the homosexual agenda if there's openly homosexual or transgender people in office.
Well, not if you have the right people. I mean, the problem is we don't often have the right people who have the spine to stand up to it.
Well, yeah, I don't think we have the right people who know how to fight at all, to tell you the truth. I was trying to think what I was going to tell you in this interview, and I think the only thing I can think is we have to grow up, the conservatives, and, I mean, stop with this fear of doing this issue. Because it seems to me very clearly that where the Republican Party is going on this is they're doing, in some states they're doing good legislation, but on Capitol Hill especially, there's nothing going on. There's a lot of political correctness, and I think a lot of people want to push the idea of gay Republicans as the answer to the gay Democrats.
Absolutely. What I found interesting, according to this New York Times piece on the rainbow wave, was around half of these LGBT candidates are running for state offices, apparently because they recognize a lot of the fight for religious freedom right now is taking place at the state level. You have the bathroom bills, you have measures concerning adoption laws, that sort of thing. So they're recognizing that there has been a lot of effective work done on the ground at the state level. That's why they want to run for those offices.
Right, and that's why I say we need to grow up, because we need Christians to be who are office holders to be bold, regardless of if there's somebody who's openly homosexual or transgender or not. For example, one of the key pieces of legislation going forward are these adoption bills, Janet. Remember the gay activist line used to be, oh, if you don't let force all the adoption agencies to cater to homosexual parenting, you're going to not have enough adoptive families for all the kids. Well, it turns out the opposite is true. If you force the Christians to negate their beliefs, the adoption centers, well, then they're just going to get out of the adoption business entirely, and you won't have as many Christian families or families altogether to put these kids in.
Right.
And so, you know, we have to get beyond the homosexual narrative and get to these policies defending religious freedom and pushing for common sense pro-family policies.
Well, you hit on upon something very important, and that is the term religious freedom. This is fundamental to our republic. As we know in the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, we are guaranteed freedom of religion because that's a right given to us, not by government, but by God. If we get rid of freedom of religion, we're not going to have an American republic like we've had ever again. What I don't think a lot of Christians understand, though, Peter, is that's exactly what they hate. They don't want to have any Christian allowed to have any exemption for religious conscience. They think religious conscience is freaky and weird and nobody should have it. But this is in some ways an existential fight, don't you think?
Absolutely. They really regard, they just call it another thing. They say, well, that's just religious-based discrimination.
Yes.
And you have to remember, look, we have to get beyond their words. They call them sexual orientation non-discrimination laws. Well, those laws, which when they're passed, actually have been used to discriminate against people of faith and pro-family wholesome organizations like the Boy Scouts. Hardly anybody remembers that, you know, remember the legislation against the Boy Scouts, Janet?
Yes.
And then they ended up selling out after they won in the Supreme Court. Well, most people don't remember that the entire litigious campaign, the lawfare that the left used against the Boy Scouts began with a sexual orientation law, so-called, in New Jersey. That's where it all started. So we need to start calling those laws, those pro-homosexual, pro-transgender laws, what they are, which is discriminatory legislation. They just shift the discrimination and they make it against us.
Yes. Well, and you think about the candidates coming into office where you were talking earlier about, you know, it's harder maybe for somebody to stand up to the gay agenda if there is a homosexual working next to you. But they never stop fighting for what they want just because there's a Christian sitting next to them. So why do we have so little courage?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, if you look at the marriage movement, it's largely died, and I don't understand it. I mean, it, you know, the left used to say that Republicans were just using Christians on issues like that, and now I think that that's partly true, because I think politicians like George Bush used the marriage issue. Now, I hope he still believes in marriage between a man and a woman, but, I mean, now it's largely been, you know, oh, that's over. We lost in the Supreme Court. Move on. And we can't have that attitude. We have to be like the pro-lifers. Nobody compromises on life who's worth their salt on that issue.
Right.
And it's got to be the same on homosexuality and gender confusion.
Well, that's right. And they're both huge fights. On the one hand, you're fighting to preserve the sanctity of human life and the women who are harmed through abortion and the men as well, the dads. That's a whole huge issue that needs to be fought. But this one, we're seeing in the headlines every single day almost, Peter, Christians who are at the receiving end of this ideology lose their livelihoods. Even people like Kim Davis go to jail. How much more warning do we need to say these people, if they continue to get more and more and more of what they want, it's not going to bode well for Christians? You can't compromise on this issue because you will be suppressed in what your rights are as an American.
Right. It's a zero-sum game, to quote Kai Feldblum, who's a lesbian on the EEOC, appointed by Obama. But unfortunately, Trump said he wants to keep her, and that's another, a whole other fight.
Yes.
We need to get him to pull that her appointment there, but I don't know if that's still possible. But absolutely, you know, where gay power grows, religious liberty and liberties of all kinds, not just for religious people, for anybody who believes that, for example, strongly that marriage is nothing more than between a man and a woman. You know, we're seeing schools who have homosexual teachers say, well, the teacher says, well, I'm married now. And then the school is a Christian school. And they say, hey, wait a minute. We don't allow homosexuality to be celebrated, or we don't allow openly homosexual people to be teachers. And there's lawsuits against those Christian schools. Everywhere you see it go in our society, you're going to see this litigation. And unfortunately, a lot of it is also impacting children. It's corrupting kids by promoting homosexuality as normal to kids.
Right. So you still have a problem with the GLSEN material in the public schools then, don't you? I mean, we've seen what they've been doing.
GLSEN is a hard left organization which is now promoting misinformation in the gay history lessons. I saw something ludicrous where they said that gay marriage was common in Rome or something to that effect.
Oh, wow.
You know, GLSEN would purport to be the authority on homosexual and bisexual and transgender issues in schools, and yet it's a hard left partisan organization. And this is what's happening. It's the same thing what we were talking about with the New York Times, Janet. The New York Times no longer believes there's even anybody worth quoting on the other side.
Yes, that's exactly
right.
Their
idea of a balanced article is if you have a gay Republican in the article about 10 gay Democrats.
Well said. We got to take a break. We'll come back with Peter LaBarbara talking about the rainbow wave. Stay with us. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. For the last few months, we've been telling you about the great ministry called Preborn. Preborn works with hundreds of pro-life pregnancy centers across America, providing free ultrasounds for women in crisis pregnancies. And 80% of the time, when that mom sees her little baby on an ultrasound, she'll choose life. But Preborn isn't just about saving unborn children. They also have a passion to see those babies' mothers come to faith in Jesus Christ. And they're seeing results every day. Through the work of Preborn, more than 48,000 babies have been saved, and 24,000 women have trusted in Christ as their Lord and Savior. But summertime can be a challenging season when it comes to support. That's why we here at Janet Mefford Today are committed to helping Preborn save 300 babies during the month of August. We need to raise $8,400 this month so we can keep providing those free ultrasounds to women who might otherwise abort their own children and who might otherwise never hear the gospel. If you can help Preborn during this critical time, please call 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229. Now, a gift of $140 will help provide 5 free ultrasounds, but a gift of any size would be greatly appreciated. Please help us help Preborn this month and help save the life of a preborn child. 100% of your donation will go directly to the pregnancy centers. That number again is 855-601-BABY. 855-601-2229. Now, if you prefer to donate online, go to preborn.com and please tell them you are a Janet Mefford Today listener. We greatly appreciate your generosity at this critical time. Call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229. Or go to preborn.com and please let them know you are a Janet Mefford Today listener. Let's save some lives. Call now, 855-601-2229. Thank you. We're back on Janet Mefford Today. Let's see. Pennsylvania's Democrat Governor Tom Wolf has signed an executive order creating the Pennsylvania Commission on LGBTQ Affairs, which is a body dedicated to promoting homosexual and transgender interests in a wide variety of ways. This is from LifeSite News, and it's just indicative of what the New York Times refers to as the rainbow wave. 2018 has more LGBT candidates than ever. One of these candidates, as I'm talking with Peter LaBarbara from Americans for Truth about Homosexuality, Peter, you might have been reading about this particular candidate, Christine Hallquist. She is the first transgender woman, which means this is a man who believes he's a woman, first transgender woman candidate for governor of Vermont. And among other people, Christine Hallquist is up against a 14-year-old. So a very interesting, no kidding. I'm not kidding.
Well, my first axiom is that men make bad women.
I agree.
And I think that picture actually bears that out. I mean, it's just, and women make bad men.
Yes.
And that's, you know, this game of let's pretend is ridiculous. And I wanted to say something, Janet, too, in these races. I'm afraid that the people running against these candidates will be afraid to point out their you know, partisan interest, LGBTQ, because of this political correctness and being afraid of what the media is going to say. And you can't be afraid to tell the truth about these candidates. The reality is, for people like Christine Hallquist, this guy who thinks he's a woman, their number one priority is promoting the homosexual, bisexual, transgender agenda. You know how you have candidates that says R and then the state, you know, for the politicians?
Yes.
I feel like for these guys, you should be like Christine Hallquist, transgender, Vermont.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
plus. How about plus? That would work. Just kind of
Sharia Davids, lesbians, Kansas. I mean, because their number one priority is always the homosexual agenda. They're trying to reach out and say, hey, we're good on all these other issues. By the way, most of them are far left. Most of these candidates are far, far left. There's a few Republicans. But, you know, they're when it comes to the homosexual agenda, they will always be pushing that. That is their number one goal.
Well, David says in the New York Times article, having LGBT people sitting in the room while decisions are being made and sitting there as peers will shift the conversation. That's and here's something very interesting, Peter, along those lines. You remember when Anise Parker, the totalitarian lesbian mayor, ex-mayor of Houston, she of the bathroom bill draconian pushed through. Do you remember when she said, this is all about me?
Right. Yeah. And that very interesting. Yeah, it is about them. And you know what else, Janet? What occurs to me when they say seat at the table, isn't it interesting that the whole agenda of this crowd is to keep us from having a seat at that table?
Yeah.
They don't want us to have a seat. So in the name of diversity, they actually try to box us out. And I find that fascinating about the left. I mean, oh, they're all about inclusion and diversity, but then they want to shut down these ex-gay ministries.
Yep.
Right?
And therapy.
They
yep.
don't care about diversity. They
nope.
don't care about intellectual diversity, diversity of ideas, including people who may be ex-gay. They couldn't care less about that.
No way. No way. Let me refer to this, because when we're talking about Anise Parker, she is now the head of the LGBT Victory Institute. I think there's maybe a Q on the end. Who knows these days? But this is from a project they have at this group called Out for America. This is a group all about electing LGBTQ plus candidates. Here's what it says on the Out for America page. You'll find this interesting, Peter. There are 559 known openly LGBTQ elected officials in the U.S., and they say America needs to elect 22,837 more to achieve equitable representation. Excuse me, but if that's how we're going to use the standard, that we have to have equitable representation according to whatever your identity is, then shouldn't we have millions of people who are Christians who are required to represent our republic in various public offices? I mean, this is insane.
Right.
We have to have 22,000 more.
We're talking about homosexual, bisexual, transgender quotas.
Yeah,
basically perversion quotas for our elected officials.
Yeah.
And what I fear is that the Republicans or whoever's going to be opposing these candidates, many of the people opposing them will be afraid to highlight these radical agendas because, unlike Trump, they're fearful of the media. And I think this is Trump's greatest contribution to this entire debate and politics, is that he doesn't care about the media.
Doesn't care.
And the media only has power if you always care what the media say. And so the media are basically part of the LGBTQ activist movement now.
Yeah.
And so if you're a candidate running against these candidates, these homosexual candidates, bisexual, transgender, you have got to point out that they are beholden to that radical perversion agenda.
And isn't this for a population that is still less than 3% of the population?
Absolutely. I think less than 2%, although, you know, who knows? But, I mean, it's not 10%. Remember that lie?
Oh, yeah.
That was a lie created by an actual activist who said, hey, we want to build up our numbers. So let's say that 10% of the population is gay. And for years and years, the media treated that as fact.
Yeah, they did.
This is why we're losing, Janet, because the media have been a shill for the homosexual agenda.
What do they want next, Peter? You have tracked this agenda for a very long time, for many, many years. You've been on the ground and you've seen more and learned more probably than anybody on these activists. What is it they want? They always are moving the goalposts. They got so-called gay marriage. They got Caitlyn Jenner on the front of Vanity Fair. Bruce Jenner, now Caitlyn is what he calls himself. What do they want next? The Equality Act?
They want more power, and they want to use their power. They've built up this incredible power. Now they feel they've got to use it. And so how do they use it? They manipulate corporations to give them more money and make more radical transformations in their corporations, which includes, for example, most companies now, many big companies are funding these awful body disfiguring transgender operations.
Yeah.
So they want to grow power, and then they want to persecute others with their power because it's all about validating themselves. If you want to validate yourself, you don't want to have those Christians around disagreeing and saying homosexual marriage isn't really marriage, or homosexuality is not who you are, it's just a behavior and you can change. Those ex-gays, which are, you know, remind them that they don't have to be openly homosexual and celebrating it. They want to take they want to use the state to quash that voice because they have the power to do it. And unfortunately, a lot of people are bending to their agenda.
Well, can I ask you a question? And this may be a little bit uncomfortable. I know I'm wading into some waters here that might make people a little uncomfortable, but I think I need to talk about it because people have noticed, for example, that movie that came out that was hailed, that was celebrating pederasty. I think you were the one, Peter, who initially told me that back in the day, the gay pride parades would have members of NAMBLA, the North American Man-Boy Love Association. Yes, some of them would. People, when they talk about what's next with this group, are really worried about the issue of children in particular. Do you have concerns along those lines?
Well, I mean, I saw that movie, Call Me By Your Name.
Yes.
Or Call Me By My Name. It was weird, whatever it was. But, I mean, in that movie, there's an adult male in his 30s, I believe, or 20s, with a 16-year-old boy. So aren't we already there? Haven't they been mainstreaming this? I mean, we have Alfred Kinsey, who was you know, taking data from a pederast, and the government is about to celebrate his home and give it a, you know, special landmark notoriety, his boyhood home or his home where he did his experiments in Indiana. I mean, you know, we're already there in terms of the homosexual movement pushing more and more of the boundaries open. And, you know, and what about just kids, Janet? We have kids who are deciding that they're the opposite sex.
Yeah.
And the adults are saying, oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
You can be the opposite sex.
Everybody's scared. What would you like to see in terms of Christian pushback and Christians being willing to say, like Trump, I don't care what the media says about me. I have a duty as a Christian to stand up for morality in the public square. What would you say to people who are listening, who are maybe considering running for public office, but are concerned about, oh boy, I'm going to really put my foot into the fire here?
Okay, I think, let's see if you like this one. I think, number one, don't listen to the establishment Republican Party, or whatever party you're in. Don't listen to that. Because they will tell you, oh, don't talk about this, don't talk about the homosexuality at all. Even if you're running against an openly homosexual radical candidate, they will say, don't talk about that. Baloney. Talk about how, I mean, I think we have to be as bold as they are. Why not?
Yeah,
right?
Right.
I mean, that's, I think, Trump's lesson to the Republicans. How many times do we have the Republicans being politically correct and then they lost? Trump was the most politically incorrect of all,
yeah. And
he wins.
Yes.
And so I think we need to be bold and push our legislation to proclaim, defend, expand freedom as opposed to them clamping it down.
I agree. Well, and I think to keep an eye out on groups like this LGBT Victory Institute, because they're all about training the next generation of LGBT candidates. It's all they do. All the information's on the website. People should do this kind of opposition research that you're so good at, Peter.
Well, yeah, we have to know what they're all about because they tell us. And you know, Janet, you ask where it's going. Do you notice now the kids they're not coming out gay. They're coming out either transgender or pansexual.
Oh, come on.
It always gets more perverse.
Yeah. There's not a kid in America who probably even really understands what a pansexual is. They got it from Miley Cyrus on her Instagram or something.
I don't think gay activists understand what pansexuality is.
It's nuts.
But somehow we're all supposed to just embrace it.
It's completely nuts. We got to have a spine here. It's ridiculous. And I think it's interesting that one of the ways they're trying to get into office these days is by downplaying the LGBT angle, even though that's what they're all about, and trying to be anti-Trump, or like Christine Hallquist is trying to emphasize he's a technocrat, she is a technocrat. I mean, Trump is the uniting factor, which I think is interesting because Trump has done some great things, but he hasn't exactly been zealous attacking this agenda. What do you make of it?
Yeah, they're trying to say that Trump has really, really done a ton of things against the LGBT agenda. He hasn't done enough. I wish he would do more. He's been outstanding on life. And by the way, I think that Ms. Davids, that the American Indian Native American, who is also a lesbian, she's also pro-abortion. And you will see that a lot of times with these homosexual candidates. They are radically pro-abortion.
Yeah.
It's just a fact. But I think, again, with Trump, Trump has lessons for us. The Republican Party, some of these guys, they won't talk about anything. And so we're not even able to talk about the radical agenda, much less the fact that you're running against an open homosexual. And so how can we win when we're afraid to raise controversy?
Great question. Great, Peter. I agree with you completely. Peter LaBarbera, thank you so much. AmericansForTruth.com, the website. And we'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. For $140, you can provide ultrasounds to 5 women in crisis pregnancies. Call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or visit preborn.com. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. Glad to have you here. Don't you find it a little interesting how some Me Too stories are more interesting to the media than others? I think it's very interesting. For instance, when an accuser of Roy Moore came forward when he was seeking office recently, boy, they loved that story. They were all over it. They were digging out victims left and right. They were putting stories forward that weren't even really stories of any import at all. He tried to kiss me once and things like that. And it doesn't sound like abuse to me. But if it's Keith Ellison, the deputy chair of the Democratic National Committee, who is now fending off allegations of domestic abuse against his ex-girlfriend, they're not so interested in that story because right now it's just a few days away from the primary election for attorney general in the state of Minnesota. And Keith Ellison is a candidate. And we'll see how it all pans out. Anyway, the former girlfriend's name is Karen Monahan, and her son came out with a Facebook post. His name is Austin Aslam Monahan, and you can read the Facebook post if you Google it on the internet. But he basically says this: my brother and I watched our mom come out of horrific circumstances after getting out of her relationship with Keith Ellison. For several months, we knew something wasn't right and couldn't figure it out. When we asked our mom if everything was okay, she told us she was dealing with some stress and would be okay. In the middle of 2017, I was using my mom's computer trying to download something, and I clicked on a file. I found over 100 text and Twitter messages. This is what he said. And video, almost 2 minutes long, that showed Keith Ellison dragging my mama off the bed by her feet, screaming, calling her names, and telling her to get out of his house. The messages I found were mixed with him consistently telling my mom he wanted her back, he missed her, he knew he messed up, and we wished he could do things different. That's what he said. He would victim shame, bully her, and threaten her if she went public. Karen Monahan then came out on Twitter. She said she had deleted her Facebook account a few days before, but she did say what my son said is true. And it's interesting because people have noted that she has been a Me Too advocate, and she has a Twitter feed full of Me Too, Me Too, Me Too for quite a while. Now, this was a little bit interesting. She had gone on a Muslim American TV show. I'd never heard of it before, but it was linked, I think, to public TV. This was an interesting interview because this host was asking her about her involvement in the Me Too movement and the sorts of stories that she had heard. And this was a portion of the interview that I found really interesting. Listen to this.
As I said, Me Too survivor. And I haven't shared all of my experiences, and for these exact reasons. I mean, as a mother, right? That feminine side of us, and we all possess male and female, masculine, feminine energies, right? Mm-hmm. And we protect. We protect our children. Sometimes we just keep stuffing it and stuffing it because when we see what's happening, when a woman comes out and shares her story, you've seen the Facebook post, you've seen the commentary on media, you're smeared. I mean, you were victimized, and to have the courage to speak, I think people see it as an isolated incident. Oh, he, you know, grabbed her or this. There are so many different experiences around abuse.
There's a scale, too.
There's a scale, and it's traumatizing.
All right, Karen Monahan, she didn't name names. She didn't go into her story, but she did confirm over the weekend what my son said is true. And she has texts, and she was posting some of her texts, allegedly between herself and Keith Ellison. Keith Ellison actually has some pictures of her on his Twitter feed that people have posted. What I find really interesting, very interesting to me, is going back, people were beginning to post this story from 2006. I believe this was from a blogger who put this out. It's called the Wright County Republican. And it was a story about a woman named Amy Alexander. It's called Coming Out of the Dark, Breaking the Silence About the Anointed Candidate. And the whole thing is her Me Too story about Keith Ellison. Now, I don't know how much traction this thing got back in 2006, clearly not enough to derail his aspirations to be a congressman, but it's a very disturbing story. And she talks about how she was involved with him while he was married. And then she said he belittled her about her weight and constantly criticized her every word and action. He ostracized me from the community on whose behalf I had worked so hard to advocate. And then they broke up, and then she said they got back together, and it got even darker. You can read this whole thing if you want to get into all of the details. And he says some mean things to her, and then she finally says that his anger erupted. He berated me. He grabbed me and pushed me out of the way. I was terrified. I called the police. As he fled, he broke my screen door. I have never been so scared. I immediately began to second guess myself, as many victims of abuse do when at the brink of exposing their abuser. How could I or anyone stand up to the man who had been the local icon of Black militancy for almost two decades? So Amy Alexander, the woman who penned this, I'm sure will receive renewed scrutiny by every major progressive media outlet in America, right? Nah, probably not. Probably not. This is the terrible thing about it. I think the difficulty in the Me Too movement is you can't guarantee that every single story happened the way that the person said, but you can't automatically discount any of them either. If you're going to decide what actually happened, there needs to be weighing of the evidence. And sometimes it's just weighing evidence in public, which isn't always a fair trial. And sometimes it's weighing the evidence in a courtroom where it really ought to be taking place. So we'll see how this goes down. But here's what I also take into account. And again, you can go back to the Roy Moore story and you can apply it to that story as well. Keith Ellison was actually outed as having four Pinocchios by the Washington Post back in March. That is, they were basically accusing him of being a big liar back in March. What was the issue back in March? The vice chair of the Democratic National Committee faced questions about his association with Louis Farrakhan, the leader of the Nation of Islam, when he sought the chairmanship of the DNC in 2017. Ellison, who had defended Farrakhan against charges of anti-Semitism as a law student, publicly renounced the Nation of Islam in 2006 when he ran for Congress, but the issue reemerged after a CNN exploration about his decade-long involvement in the group. Going forward, Farrakhan has been back in the news with a fiery anti-Semitic speech on February 25th that included a knock on Ellison for having distanced himself from the group when he ran for Congress. And he displayed a photo of Ellison selling the Nation of Islam newspaper in 1998 during a march against police brutality. Then Ellison was on MSNBC. He implied he had no association with Farrakhan since 2006. His spokesman flatly said he had no additional involvement. But new evidence, the Washington Post said, suggests these statements are false. There were at least three recent cases at the time this story was written in which Ellison and Farrakhan appeared to have crossed paths and may have even spoken. One was from a YouTube video uncovered by the Daily Caller, in which Ellison is seen chatting with a group of men, including Farrakhan, at a mosque in Falls Church, Virginia. In 2013, he attended a dinner for the Iranian president with at least 30 other U.S. Muslim leaders, including Farrakhan. And in 2016, oh, wait a minute, Ellison met privately with Farrakhan. Shortly after Ellison wrote his Washington Post article, Farrakhan posted an interview on his Facebook page in which he said the deceitful op-ed was the result of Jewish control of politics, economics, Hollywood, music, and media. Farrakhan told his interviewer, both of them, when I was in Washington, visited my suite, meaning Ellison and Representative Andre Carson, the only other Muslim member of Congress. That's what Farrakhan said. Both of them, when I was in Washington, visited my suite and we sat down talking. But evidently, the enemy has made me the litmus test for all Black people who want to rise in their world. So what happens? The Washington Post ends up giving this claim that he has had nothing to do with Louis Farrakhan since 2006 for Pinocchios. The Washington Post. Ellison repeatedly danced around the question, they said, of his association with Farrakhan, including whether they have crossed paths, but he needs to provide a better explanation for what he was doing in Farrakhan's hotel suite in 2016 and what they discussed. Character counts, because when you look at somebody's long-term history, it does matter. Does somebody have a history of being kind and loving and a good guy? Does somebody have sort of a difficult past with people who are perhaps claiming things about him that are not good? You have to take these things into account. Only God knows for sure. But it will be, definitely will be interesting to see if this affects Ellison's next political aspiration. We're going to come back on Janet Mefford Today after this. Be right back. Stay with us. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? We're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you'll access healthcare, so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 per month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org. Regain control over your healthcare costs. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. That number again, 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to save babies' lives through ultrasound. Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
Last week, just one example of a mom who came in was very abortion-minded, and when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and saw that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her, and she said, I just can't allow this baby to be killed, for her own words.
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she will choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Will you help save babies' lives? For $140, you can sponsor free ultrasounds for 5 young women. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229. Or give securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Welcome back. Over the last few months, news outlets have reported that the persecution of Christians and other religious minorities in China is at the worst it's been since the Cultural Revolution. In an effort to assure loyalty to the Communist Party, local governments across China are shutting down hundreds of house churches and curtailing the freedoms of believers under this process known as sinicization. Why is this happening and what is this sinicization all about? Bryn Lawrence is the English editor for China Aid, which works to expose the systematic persecution, harassment, torture, and imprisonment of Chinese Christians and human rights lawyers in China. And she will bring us an update now. Bryn, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to be on the show.
It's great to have you here. Could you bring us up to speed a little bit and give us an overview of what life is like for Christians in China right now?
Yeah, so life for Christians in China right now is getting increasingly difficult. China, in fact, just this past February, they introduced some new regulations for religion. It's called the Regulations on Religious Affairs, and that basically curtails a lot of their religious freedom. So when if you are a Christian in China and you are going to church, specifically in churches that are not registered with the state, with the government, you can be subjected to arrest and torture and detention, questioning, a wide variety of things.
Wow. What precipitated this? Because for a time, I know, and I don't know all the details, but I know house churches have been somewhat tolerated for quite a while. Why did this suddenly start in February that they began to crack down? Was it because of the president directing this, or what were the factors?
So the root actually isn't in the regulations in February. The root of this started back in 2013 when the current Chinese president, Xi Jinping, came into power. He kind of is beginning to assemble a bit of a personality cult around himself, and he wants to kind of become the sole power and the sole source of, like, ideological thought.
Right. Now, is it true that he's a Maoist? Is that a fair characterization?
I'd say that's a very fair characterization. As a matter of fact, he is the most Maoist president that we've had since Mao Zedong.
Oh, goodness. Well, that doesn't bode well for Christians. Well, what is the number there? About 100 million Christians, according to some reports. Is that still an accurate statistic in China?
Yes, the official statistic in China is much lower, but the most scholars place Christians in between, I think, 85 million to 100 million.
Wow. Well, that would be a formidable force to have to contend with if you're trying to crack down and make your country more in line with communism. So what are some of the ways that Christians are being, you know, dealt with? The shutting down of house churches, obviously, and you name some of these other things, but how bad is it? Are you now not able to gather together in some parts of China for worship? Or what is the net effect on a lot of these Christians?
It varies from place to place, but a lot of Christians are, you know, they're not allowed to gather together because their churches have been closed. Usually first it'll start off with the officials will raid the church and, you know, they may confiscate some items and tell them you can't gather here anymore. They'll take down information from ID cards on people, and they'll usually detain or question the pastors. And obviously, you know, if it happens several times, the pastors may be further arrested, and in that case, they can be jailed for a long time.
Right. So going back to this concept of cynicization, for a lot of listeners, they may be saying, what in the world is that? But this is about just encouraging and enforcing, really, the support of the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party, right? Is that really the essence of it?
Yes. Yeah, so basically, cynicization is it's an attempt to just take all of the religions under Communist Party control. I think China knows that they can't necessarily get rid of religious freedom in their constitution. They can't necessarily say, you know, oh, you can't be a religion, because that would bode really badly for their international relations. However, what they try to do is they say, you can follow these religions as long as the religions about our ideas and not their actual theology.
Right. So, in other words, your religion has to be guided by the core values of socialism. That was the way the government put it in one of the reports that they put out.
Yes. And they also make it very clear to them that they are supposed to first be devoted to the party and then devoted to God.
Wow. Well, now, how are most of these Christians dealing with this crackdown? What have you been hearing from some of the believers over there?
A lot of the Christians are just very strong in their faith, and a lot of them know that they have the right to religious freedom. That is actually technically in the Chinese Constitution.
Right.
And the Chinese Constitution specifies that the government may not interfere with religions. And a lot of churches know that, and they will fight back using that and say, you know, hey, we're just practicing our religion. We're not trying to overthrow the government. We're not trying to cause any unrest or harm. We're just peaceful practitioners.
Right. Now, one of the things that came up, I know, a few months back was the issue of recalibrating the Bible to a certain extent. What can you tell us about that? Have they been continuing to pressure Christians to cynicize the Bible in any way?
I haven't necessarily heard a ton about that recently. I know that there was some stuff about it online, possibly with the sale of Bibles, but I haven't heard a ton about it recently.
Right. Well, I know that China Aid had launched this petition just in the last few days to free a North Carolina pastor who's been locked away on a trumped up charge. What is going on? Because there are obviously Americans who are over in China at the moment and not the greatest conditions under Jinping right now. But can you tell us a little bit about that pastor and what's going on with him?
Yeah, so he is a North Carolina resident. His name is John Tsao. And he was a missionary in Myanmar. He was establishing schools for impoverished children in the northern part where it borders China. And he was crossing the border, and China got wind of it, and they took him into custody along with his colleague and charged them with illegal border crossing, even though they've crossed the border many times in that matter, never had a problem. Basically, what's happening with him is he's still a Chinese citizen, but he has North Carolina residency and has preached in North Carolina. His wife is an American citizen, stuff like that. So the Chinese government still kind of views him as a Chinese person and is treating him as such.
Yeah. Well, one of the questions I have is, in light of the Trump administration's increased attention to religious freedom around the globe with this recent ministerial and the like, what would you like to see the United States do to potentially deal with this issue? Maybe the Secretary of State putting pressure on China to back off. Is there anything being done through our federal government to put pressure on China to leave Christians alone and to back off against the church?
China Aid actually has a quite a few allies within the U.S. government who will put pressure on China. And that actually is very effective because China likes to look good to the outside world. And so when we kind of say to them, your abuses are known and they're seen and we don't like them, and, you know, this could possibly impact trade, it could impact other things, that's when they tend to listen and when they actually tend to free people. So it's actually really effective when people are letting congressmen know of these things, when they're letting the president know of these things, because then those people in power can go to China and present those issues to them.
Right. Now, you had mentioned earlier, I know that religious freedom, as you said, is in the Chinese constitution. It's been there since, what, 1982, something around mm-hmm. then. But is there any leverage that Christians have to appeal to the constitution? I mean, clearly, they don't have a republic the way we do in the United States. But is there any hope that anybody could point to what's in the Constitution, human rights attorneys or the like, and say the government is out of line? And are there any ways to stop this by using the Constitution itself?
I believe so. The Chinese government doesn't often listen to people who say this isn't in the Constitution, but even technically the regulations on the religious affairs are supposed to be underneath the Constitution. So technically, by law, lawyers and just normal people should be able to point to the Constitution and say, you are violating my rights according to our laws.
Yes.
But unfortunately, the government doesn't really listen.
Well, that's always a problem. What about the three mm-hmm. self movement? What about some of those, you know, Christians who are going along with the government? How does that play into the wider issue of how Christianity is being dealt with by the Chinese government?
Yeah, so the three self movement, they're very censored. They're technically the legal churches in China, but, you know, they're only really allowed to spout things that are approved by the Communist Party. So all their sermons have to be censored, and everything gets reviewed by the officials and approved by the officials. And the three self churches, they're actually coming under increased scrutiny as well. They're in one province, in Zhejiang province, they were having surveillance cameras installed in the churches that had facial recognition. And so people could see, like, you know, exactly who was doing what. And, of course, that was very frightening. A lot of those churches resisted that. And a lot of people were punished by the government because of that resistance.
Well, we are out of time. Thank you so much, Bryn Lawrence from China Aid. You can check them out at chinaaid.org. Thanks again, Bryn. And thank you for listening to Janet Mefford today. We'll see you next time.